On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and Marcus discuss Caris LeVert's thumb injury, how long he'll be out, and what that means for the team going forward. Plus, David Levy is out as Nets CEO, and we discuss some trade possibilities for Jared Allen. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another episode of the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your favorite podcast network for daily podcasts on your favorite teams. I am Josh Bass, and joining me to discuss a lot of Nets news, some kind of nondescript, mostly pretty bad though, it's Marcus Barahal. Marcus, what's going on? Is it time to hit the panic button with our Nets?
Josh, good to be back on the pod, first of all, but yeah, it might be panic time. If the games themselves weren't reason to panic enough, this Caris LeVert news might be enough to drive you and me over the edge.
Yeah, it's a lot going on. So just to get you set up on the show, we're going to talk about the David Levy stuff and him parting as CEO of the Nets after a very short stint. We're going to talk about the Caris LeVert injury, Iman Shumpert being signed in his stead as kind of that last roster spot that the Nets had with Wilson Chandler, and then also break down some Jarrett Allen trade ideas, kind of building off our conversation on the podcast yesterday, basically talking about, hey, this guy is someone that Nets fans might be souring on a bit. Maybe the reputation he has around the league kind of outweighs the actual value he provides. And if the Nets were looking to at least inquire on what a deal could look like, what would make sense to get back? But let's start with that LeVert news, because it is a really big deal. So basically what had happened was he missed yesterday's game with a sprained thumb. Thought it was going to be kind of minor injury, nothing really of note in the Phoenix game, which would make you say, hey, he's going to be out for a long time. But tweet from Shams today basically saying, Brooklyn Nets fear guard Caris LeVert has ligament damage in his right thumb, and he's visiting specialists for further evaluation. Obviously, this is a much bigger deal. Same injury that Dinwiddie had last year that kept him out for a significant period of time, Marcus.
Yeah, it was basically exactly what Dinwiddie had, and he wound up missing 14 games for Brooklyn, and it probably would have been more if it hadn't happened to have like fallen with the All-Star break in the middle of that. So he missed like over a month, and if LeVert winds up missing that much time, that pretty much puts him out until 2020, or maybe like around the Christmas day after Christmas. I don't know what you would call that. Day after Christmas game.
Boxing Day game
against the Knicks. So maybe he makes his return then, hopefully sooner, obviously. But regardless of like whether or not this is that bad, it seems like he's at least going to be out for this road trip, which is going to be tough for Brooklyn.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, LeVert this year has been inconsistent, you know. He's someone that, even though he's shooting the three a bit better, I think Nets fans are frustrated just by his overall lack of scoring consistency. He has flashes of brilliance passing the ball, but still very turnover prone. Not the best free throw shooter. So, especially given that it's fourth year in the league, he had a lot of experience in college, staying for all 4 years, even though a lot of injuries were kind of the reasons for that. He's 25 years old. People expected him to be a breakout candidate this year. He just got that nice extension from the Nets to start the season. And despite his inconsistency, he's still averaging 17 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists a game. So you can get on the guy, but ultimately, he's a big contributor to this Nets team. And we talked about it on the podcast yesterday, Marcus. Without him, the Nets only really have two guys in Kyrie and Dinwiddie who are real shot creators, guys that can get you a bucket. So even though LeVert hasn't played up to his potential and up to expectations, it's still going to be a massive blow.
Yeah, last year they had a guy who I think we both thought was like really inconsistent and pretty inefficient in Shabazz Napier, but he at least was like a capable ball handler and whatnot. That seems like that would kind of fall on Theo Pinson this year if LeVert were to miss an extended period of time, and if Kyrie Irving's like shoulder thing that has him now questionable for that Nuggets game, if that turns out to be anything that requires him to sit, and obviously Dinwiddie would have to take on way more responsibility than he has right now. So that could be an issue. But also, I was reading this New York Post article, like, just about the story and the Nets signing Amon Shumpert for depth with all this going on. And did you know that the Nets orthopedist is named Martin O'Malley, which I think was also the name of one of the candidates for president in 2016?
Yeah, no, I knew that.
I don't know how I didn't know that. It's a different guy, but, you know.
Yeah, it's a different guy. Yeah, I mean, yeah, Martin O'Malley, what was he, senator or governor of Maryland? One of those two?
Something former. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, but no, Martin O'Malley, the orthopedist, is like, he's sick. He's so good. He does all, like, he did all the Brook Lopez surgeries when he was having his foot problems. Like, he's a G.
Yeah, he's the team physician for USA Basketball, it says also.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's a big-time guy. Yeah. But yeah, with this whole LeVert thing, I mean, he's been so injury-prone dating back to college. I think you have to take some solace in the fact that, hey, this is a thumb injury. It's not the lower body injury that's caused him a ton of trouble. So you hope it's kind of an outlier thing, but ultimately it is inconsistent to it's unfortunate to see his inconsistency, both not being able to stay on the court and also struggling when he's there. But again, yeah, as you mentioned, the Nets don't have anyone to play that Napier role, that if they're in a crunch, they can go to someone like him just to get a bucket off the bench. Pinson's a great dancer, but he's not someone that we want to see running point. So it's just the Nets really right now have a roster that's very role player heavy, because they expect guys like Kyrie and, of course, KD next year to really shoulder a lot of the load. But when those next tier supporting guys like Caris LeVert and Dinwiddie aren't there, and one of those two isn't there, it's just going to throw everything out of whack, and the Nets aren't going to be able to win a lot of games. And given their trajectory right now, if Caris LeVert misses a month and the Nets struggle in this stretch, even though they do play in the softer Eastern Conference, it might be difficult for them to climb their way back in the playoff race.
Yeah, my only thing with that is that, like, it's hard to see them falling, like, completely out of contention, given how, like, just terrible the East is. Like, there's basically six teams that seem like locks right now in the Celtics, Heat, Bucks, Raptors, Sixers, and Pacers. And then beyond that, the Nets are actually still tied for the seventh seed right now at 4-6 with Cleveland and Atlanta. So the Nets have struggled, but all other teams like the Magic has really struggled. Atlanta hasn't gotten off to a great start, and now John Collins is out with that suspension. The Magic have struggled, like I said, but teams like the Bulls and Pistons, who we thought maybe could compete for that eight seed, have gotten off to slow starts as well. So the Nets aren't alone. It just seems like they're not as solid, like, a lock of a playoff team that we thought they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely been disappointing, and I think the roster is flawed as is, so just to see what it's going to be like night in, night out without Caris will be unfortunate. But let's see how these other opinions come back, and who knows, maybe there will be some good news there. But in the meantime, the Nets have signed Amon Shumpert. Remember, they had that extra roster spot while Wilson Chandler is still serving his suspension. So they picked up Shumpert, who has played with Kyrie Irving before. He's obviously started his career with the Knicks. Most recently played on Sacramento last year. It shocked me because I feel like he's been around forever, but still only 29. What do you make of the Shumpert signing? Obviously, you watched him a ton when he was with the Knicks and showed some promise early on in his career.
Yeah, Shumpert obviously had that, like, tough knee injury in the playoffs in his rookie year, where prior to that, he seemed like he was on track to be, like, one of the best defensive players in the league, and maybe a guy you could trust to be, like, a tertiary ball handler. But that injury really set him back, and he's never really been the same since, especially athletically. But at the same time, he's, like, worked hard to improve his three-point shooting, which has gotten better since he came into the league. He's still not a guy that I would trust to, like, control the ball, especially not as much as, like, LeVert has. But it sort of reminds me a little bit of Rondé offensively, where he has moments of brilliance, but it's a lot of, like, out of control, and you just kind of want him to take on less than he winds up having to take on. So he's a little bit out of control in that respect, but defensively he can still hold his own. He still knows where to be. So I think it's a fine signing. I still would kind of rather, like we talked about in yesterday's podcast, just see them give Nwaba more of a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with the Nwaba point, but I think Schumbert, yeah, he does bring some defensive intensity, and at least a guy that is a competent kind of wing defender, and the Nets definitely need all the help they can get there. And shot the three ball pretty well when he was with Sacramento last year, about five attempts a game, little under 37%. So that's a good sign there. And you know, he's been an inconsistent three-point shooter throughout his career, but that's going to be, if he can hit those shots, then he'll definitely have an opportunity to get some minutes. And then obviously, the thing I'm really excited about, bring some star power from a spouse perspective, given that he's married to Tiana Taylor.
Yeah, and if there's one thing Schumpert can do, it's deliver in the clutch. Just pulling that baby out of there with his bare hands.
Exactly.
Impressive.
Yeah. He has a career in that. I'm surprised he worked so hard to come back to the NBA when he had really a ready-made career there for him as a doula.
Yeah. He's one for one so far, so you got to give him that. He's very efficient.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I have faith in him that he could deliver again. But yeah, you know, he's been working out nonstop with a famous trainer, Chris Brickley, just kind of waiting to get the nod to get that contract. And I think Levo Scott Davis of Business Insider was saying a lot of really positive things about Schumpert and the effect he had on a very youthful Kings locker room last year and helping some of their young guys develop, and he has a great reputation in the league. So hopefully it will be good for the locker room and the culture, but I'm just not sure really how much he's going to end up contributing for this Nets team. And obviously it's disappointing that his shot comes at the expense of LeVert getting hurt.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. It's just disappointing to see Karis go down after we were expecting like a nice full year with him after he missed basically half the season last year. And he was really like, he was the guy who I thought was going to win most improved player of the year this season. And obviously it could still happen, but if he misses like this much time, it's just tougher.
Yeah. And especially because remember how excited we were about his performance in the playoffs last year against Philly, because listen,
he's the best player.
Yeah. Best player by far in that series. He was the only positive thing the Nets were really doing.
Yeah. And to see that, stopped is basically like what's happened with the season, like as a whole. Like coming in, like feeling good after the playoffs in the summer, and then just kind of let down so far.
Yeah, so Nets fans might be feeling a little bummed out, but I have something that I think will cheer you up. During Thanksgiving week, how about a little bit of MyBookie? MyBookie is offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lions game. Simply choose a team against the spread for up to $250. If you win, that's amazing. Congrats, you got a little extra holiday spending money for those gifts for your loved ones. But if you lose, congrats to you as well. MyBookie will give you all your money back. It's a no-brainer because you literally can't lose. It's no risk, all gravy. I know for me, I am not the biggest football fan, so I love throwing a little bit of a wager on the games, makes things a little bit interesting. Just log on to mybookie.ag to make your first deposit with promo code LOCKEDON. And MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll. And that's top of the risk-free bet. Let me repeat, that's a guaranteed deposit and a risk-free bet for Thanksgiving only. So if you're a true football fan, you do not want to let this opportunity pass you by. You simply can't lose. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid with our code locked on. Okay, we'll move on from injury news, go to a bit more off-the-court stuff, but of course you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Stitcher, Podbean, Apple Podcasts will be there. Rate us and review us. We'd love to hear your feedback and give us some thoughts on how we're doing. And just smash that subscribe button, and you'll always have us in your ears.
Yeah, Marcus, smash that.
Smash that, exactly. So Marcus, David Levy is out as CEO of the Brooklyn Nets. Of course, the hire was made a couple months ago, a little under 2 months ago. A lot of press was given to that signing just because Levy has a really good reputation. It was the former CEO of Turner Media, but ultimately it seemed like a mutual parting of ways between him and Joe Tsai. Just things weren't working out. He was also kind of put into a leadership position in Joe Tsai's holding company with all of his ventures, both sports and non-sports. So David Levy's out. Oliver Weisberg, who's the CEO of Joe Tsai Sports, is now going to be the interim CEO of the Nets and Barclays Center as well. But do you make anything into this sudden change?
Not necessarily, just because I don't know a ton about like that side of things. But at the same time, it does seem strange that he is moving on this quickly. I would think that if you agree to a job that's like this high profile, you kind of know what it entails. And it seems like, from all the quotes and stuff that I've seen, it seems like the main reason that the split has happened is because ownership and management weren't completely aligned on what needed to happen going forward. I'm not sure what that means, but it does seem like there was some confusion maybe in him taking the job initially as to what would either be entailed by the job or the direction that the team and the franchise were headed towards. So definitely a weird look. I'm not sure if it means anything specific, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I hear you there. And I think the Nets are one team that gets a ton of publicity for their kind of CEO position. Like, Yormark was the CEO before him, before he joined his brother at Roc Nation. And he was someone that was very controversial and not someone that who was too liked by Nets fans, just given his propensity to focus on the overall marketing and not necessarily the team product. And kind of almost marketing at the expense of the team sometimes. So with him out, you know, the Nets, a lot of their value proposition to KD and Kyrie Irving was saying, hey, we're going to make you guys stars, not only on the court, but also off the court, and helping you with a lot of your ventures, getting exposure to China through Joe Tsai. So it's interesting to see that there's some turnover in the position right away, but ultimately you never know what can happen with these things. And there just seemed to be a very kind of friendly mutual parting of ways. I would have thought it might have had something to do with the whole China thing and Joe Tsai, maybe saying David Levy didn't want to be involved in this, but apparently, according to sources, that wasn't having a much of a reason on this. So interesting to note. We'll see how Oliver Weisberg can do. I think the best thing for him and any of these people in these positions is more so just to kind of do your thing behind the scenes and not get a lot of press and publicity, because if you are, it means you're doing things that are controversial and probably things that are not super interesting for the fans of the team who really just care about the basketball product.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing you would say about like a good referee, where their job is to not be noticed and just kind of make sure things run smoothly.
Exactly. If I don't know the referee's name, that's the best thing. So Zach Zarba, Hayward Workman, you guys are screwed.
Tony Brothers,
exactly. And we'll keep our eyes on that. But Marcus, hit us with some Jarrett Allen trade ideas that you've been coming up with. You've been scouring the trade machine today, just thinking through possibilities. Excited to hear what you've come up with and what you're going to surprise me with.
Yeah, so first and foremost, I just want to say shout out to anyone who's ever worked on the trade machine. There's a lot of good stuff there. I just really enjoyed myself. Moving to this kind of came up on yesterday's podcast, just because we both agree that Jared Allen is probably like overrated for his perception around the league and things like that. But my biggest takeaway from this was that despite being overrated, he's still also underpaid, and it's tough to find players of his caliber who make as little as he does. So there were guys that I initially was like, oh yeah, this type of thing would make sense. Guys like even like Harrison Barnes, who just signed an extension, so he's not eligible to be traded, but he obviously makes way too much. But he would fit with what the Nets need in terms of like a 3-4 who can kind of really defend, make open shots, that kind of thing. Even a guy like Danilo Gallinari, Andre Iguodala, Al-Farouq Aminu, guys who either can't be traded yet because they just signed this summer, or just the number that they currently make. In the case of a guy like Iguodala, like, it's just not tenable unless the Nets are also trading like a Spencer Dinwiddie, which feels like too much to give up. So those guys I kind of ruled out, those more established players. And then so I started looking at younger guys. The guy you mentioned yesterday, OG Anunoby, we talked about on that podcast. But basically with him, I felt like, given his health concerns and given Jared Allen's more established in the league, I didn't think that the Nets would do that. Another guy along those lines who's not as established would be like a Matisse Thybulle type with Philly, who they probably wouldn't want to trade this quickly into his season, although he has been getting like DNP coaches' decisions the last couple games. But I think he would fit defensively, at least, with what the Nets need.
Yeah, I like the Thybulle thing. I think the tough part of that is that Philly has no use for Jared Allen. But I think for a lot of these, it might make sense to, like, I think the three teamers are going to make the most sense, or whether it's like one of the Orlando wings and they have a glut of those guys saying, hey, we'll send those to the Nets, but they don't necessarily need Jared Allen. So can another team take Allen and then send a guard back to Portland? So maybe that's saying, or to Orlando. And maybe that's a team like, and Portland's not applicable because they have a ton of centers also, and they're waiting for Nurk to get back from injury. But maybe that's a guy like an Anthony Simons type. So a guard that has a lot of potential can get shipped to Orlando, and it's kind of helping coordinate the needs of all teams involved. But I do think it's kind of a worthwhile exercise, because even today I was at work, and one of my colleagues, shout out to Eric Amar, I was talking to him. He said, oh, I saw Allen's block on Rudy Gobert last night. That was sick. And I said, Eric, what you probably don't know is that he fouled out in 18 minutes and has like 9 offensive fouls over the last 2 games. So I think kind of the normal NBA fan and people that are just kind of following the game through highlights and all that, think Jared Allen's value and his play is a lot better than it is just because of those highlights, when in actuality they're not seeing those illegal screens on House of Highlights.
Yeah, exactly. And so then I started looking more towards the Western Conference. A team like Denver just has a ton of guys that they aren't really using, and guys salary-wise that would match up with Jared Allen would be like Malik Beasley, Torrey Craig, Juancho Hernangómez, none of whom have like really established roles in that rotation for Denver. The only thing there is similar to what we just said with Philly, where Denver doesn't really need Jared Allen just because Jokic is going to play like as much as he possibly can, which is going to probably be in like the low to mid 30s in minutes. Then they still have Mason Plumlee and Jeremy Grant, who are capable of filling in at the five. And Grant is a guy who is another one who I think would be a great fit with Brooklyn, but makes a little bit too much money.
What about a guy like, I'm just trying to think who needs centers. Atlanta comes to mind. What about like Kevin Huerter or someone like that?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. For them, I think it would just depend on if they view John Collins as more of a 4 or a 5 going forward, because if they think that he and Jared Allen can play alongside of each other, then I think that would definitely make some sense.
Miles Bridges on Charlotte.
Yeah, I looked at Charlotte. It's tough to find like a guy who like the Nets would want that the team trading him wouldn't also want. So I wound up settling on these two guys as my main one-for-one swap kind of guys. In Sacramento, Harry Giles, I think, is definitely an injury risk, but I like love his potential. And the only thing there is I don't know if Sacramento, similar to with the Hawks, would want Jared Allen and Marvin Bagley as their like long-term big man duo. And then the other one that I was considering was with Phoenix, with DeAndre Ayton out now with that suspension. Could they be interested him in a swap for Dario Saric, who makes a little bit more than Jared Allen, but you could still make that trade work?
I think that's completely giving up a lot of value if you're the Nets, because like Saric is he's not buried in the rotation for Phoenix, and he still starts, but like he's not a guy that they consider a critical piece, I feel like.
Oh no, yeah, he's like he has not played well. The only thinking there is that he, especially with LeVert out, I think he can provide more playmaking and more passing than he's been given the opportunity to do in Phoenix, especially because Devin Booker was so ball dominant, and then they added Ricky Rubio, who is going to have the ball in his hands a ton. Kelly Oubre wants the ball a ton, so I don't know that he's being utilized very well in Phoenix, and I think that in Brooklyn, as a guy who could space the floor and kind of provide almost what Rhodey Kurucs like has failed to consistently provide, I think that would be a really interesting fit. But like you said, it's probably giving up too much still if you're the Nets.
I actually really like Saric, and I feel like he's kind of gotten a raw deal since his first year or two in Philly. So he could be kind of a buy low option. I just don't know if it's the type of player you give up Jared Allen for, or just try to get him on the cheap with kind of other stuff and basically say, hey, maybe just take Musa or someone else, and let's just see if we can poach Saric from you.
Yeah. And then the other thing I was considering would be, and this is maybe a little more out there, but trying to trade like LeVert and Allen together to get a guy like Aaron Gordon. I don't know if you could even get him for those guys now that LeVert has more injury concerns, but if you had Aaron Gordon, you got KD back next year, you still had Dinwiddie and Kyrie, I feel like that could be a really like synergistic group and a group that could play off of each other, maybe in a more complementary way than what the Nets have right now.
Yeah, I really like that, because it's also like saying, hey, we can, like, we're going to have to pay Allen at the end of next season, and it's like, what is he going to command? Like, is there going to be someone out there that's going to give him a big offer and try to poison pill the Nets like they did so many times to other teams? And I feel like you don't want to be spending a lot of money on centers, and they already have a lot of money out there on a backup. And we know that with Ed Davis last year, like, you can get a really good backup center on a pretty affordable deal, if they're, as long as they're not friends with Kyrie and KD. So I think trying to package those like two guys together, especially since you don't know, once KD comes back next year, you have no idea if the fit's going to work well with, between him, Kyrie, Dinwiddie, Karis. It's probably better to get a guy who can be maybe a bit more of a complimentary player on offense versus a guy like Karis who needs the ball in his hands to be effective and is really not a threat too much from the outside. So I think he's going to really struggle once he's the third or fourth option on the team. And he hasn't proven enough to be a top two option. So it's like he's kind of in limbo, and I think it definitely makes sense to explore what you could get for him.
Yeah, but the biggest thing that I took away from all this was that a trade is not going to happen, at least for the next month or so, just because so much of the league like can't be acquired because so much of the league changed teams in the offseason. So this stuff is more down the road, but just kind of looking at things that could happen, and obviously players' stock will rise and fall like as the season progresses, but right now, just with how poorly I feel like the Nets have looked, it seems like they need to make some kind of shakeup, but it just doesn't seem possible yet.
Yeah, no, I think that's valid. But Marcus, we appreciate your efforts nonetheless to scour the trade machine, and it was good practice for you, and you'll be doing it again soon as our trade machine guru.
It's all about reps.
Exactly. You need your 10,000 hours. We are approaching 10,000 hours of podcasting. That's going to do it for us on the show today. We will be back in your ears soon, but of course, follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNets. I am at JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Bearhall, and talk to you guys soon.
Bye.